Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux. Today, I am joined by my friend and co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster for episode 260 of the show. Keaton, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Nice fall weather here in Chicago. It's nice and chilly. But apple time, playoff baseball right around the corner. Not for us, but, you know, just in general, playoff baseball is fun.
For others. For others to enjoy. Yes. Yeah, fall is the best. I think unequivocally so. And, you know, I know that our editor would disagree with us, but, you know, Dan's wrong about some things. And fall not being the best season is one of them. He contends that summer is the best season, which I guess if you're a baseball editor, you can make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, it should be pretty universally fall, but
yeah. I mean, he's wrong, but yeah.
There's still baseball in the fall, so what's wrong with that?
The most important type of baseball happens in the fall, and then we also have football. We've got the start of the NBA and the NHL, so yeah, fall rules, and apples rule as well. So
sure
I'm with you about the apples.
We have a local Apple Fest next weekend. I'm pretty pumped about.
Yeah, that sounds great. Not only are apples great, but cider donuts and apple cider itself are wonderful. So, yeah. Very happy it's the fall. We've got some great weather here in New England as well. But, you know, we're not here to talk about apples. We are here to talk about your Boston Red Sox. And on today's episode, you know, we're going to be covering news and notes, talking about some of the Red Sox organization's winners for minor league awards this year, some injury news, some roster stuff as usual. We're going to hit on the AL batting race a little bit as well, get you updated on that. And then we're going to do something a little bit off the beaten path since the Red Sox are technically eliminated at this point, and really they've been eliminated for a while, but you know, they're mathematically eliminated at this point. So we're going to talk about the Boston sports landscape and how the Red Sox fit into that. So hopefully, you know, those of you who live in the New England area and follow all of the teams around here will enjoy kind of the discussion of how the Red Sox fit into that, in our opinion. So let's get right to it, Keaton. Trevor Story hit the IL with a heel contusion right after we recorded our podcast last week. That resulted in Bobby Dalbec coming back up. Anything notable about this, whether, you know, Trevor Story hitting the IL again, you know, he's been on there multiple times this season, or Bobby Dalbec coming back up after, you know, being pretty hot down in AAA?
Yeah, I think both a little bit. Trevor Story hitting the IL again is a bummer. And, if you know, it's been a difficult season for him. But I'm optimistic that once healthy, it shouldn't be a problem thing going forward for him, because he really, up until this year, had never missed really like any time due to injury. Like, he'd never had injury problems in Colorado at all. Had always played like 140 plus games every single year. I think played like 55 or whatever, or I mean almost all of the games in the COVID shortened season as well. So all of the different injuries that he's ended up having this year have kind of really been inconsistent with his history, and he's really, for the most part, been pretty healthy. You can pencil him in there for a bunch of games. So I think this is just kind of an outlier season for him. And so I'm hoping, having, you know, a nice out of season to get fully healthy, that this kind of isn't a problem going forward, and look for him to have a much better bounce back season next year, and a little bit smoother of a transition here back to the Red Sox. So, but it was really good to see Bobby Dalbec get hot down at AAA as well. I don't think it's a huge surprise that he's back, but we'll see if, you know, that helped him kind of get right with the swing and things, and see if he's able to really kind of do anything here over the last, like 2 weeks, that really kind of has for a showcase. But I don't think it's going to be enough to really, you know, swing the pendulum of what his future role might be. I think that's pretty much set in stone at this point now.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right about that. If anything, maybe give him a little bit of confidence heading into next year. I don't think it's going to change his value in the eyes of other teams, no matter how he does. And I'm fully with you on Trevor Story. I'm not worried about him long term. It just kind of stinks that the first year that he has really suffered injuries has been his first year here with the Red Sox. Rafael Devers, though, a little bit of injury news from tonight's game as we were watching this. Alex Speer tweeted out that, you know, he seemed to be limping after grounding into a double play. You know, the rain delay is going on right now as we're recording this episode, so we're not sure if he's going to come back out after that. But, you know, definitely something to monitor here. Wouldn't really surprise me, given the second half that Devers has been having, if, you know, they ended up shutting him down for a little while here, and maybe even for the last week or so of the season.
No, I don't think that it would. I don't think that's a bad thing either. I think, like, there's obviously no reason to push it. Not really chasing anything. So I think an abundance of caution in making sure that he is as healthy as possible would be a good thing. But, I mean, we've seen him kind of, like, limping and struggling here for a very, very extended period of time. And I feel like, why risk the potential for something major to happen over the last 10 games? Just shut him down. It's 10 games. It's not worth it.
Yeah, not a whole lot of the season left. I will guess that he's going to try and talk his way back into the lineup if it's nothing serious, because I think he has been kind of taking a page out of Xander's book of, you know, trying to get in there as much as he can when he's not 100%, which is certainly something that you like to see from Devers. But, you know, at the same time, it's just, it's clear that there have been a lot of things piling up, like you said. So You know, I think he's probably looking forward to the off season as well to get his body right. As everybody's dealing with a lot of stuff, but it seems like he's just been dealing with a little bit more. But other guys that, you know, do have something to play for, Nathan Eovaldi is going to be activated later on this week and reportedly will make about two more starts before the end of the year. That's pretty important for Nathan Eovaldi, I think, to show other teams that he is indeed healthy. And, you know, I'm going to be looking for Nathan Eovaldi in these last couple of starts that he makes to see if his velocity is back. And I'm sure that, you know, teams that are interested in him in this upcoming offseason are going to be watching for how he performs.
Yeah, it's a pretty big showcase. It's just to show that he's back healthy, and it seems like they might have rushed him back a bit because, I mean, the velocity was way down. I think he was kind of struggling a bit, so I don't think it was a surprise that he ended up missing some more time, but there's obviously not a lot of time left in the season, so for him to kind of put his stuff on display one more time or two more times here and a couple short stints here right before being a free agent is a lot of pressure on those to kind of have them go well. His entire future is riding on it, so
yeah,
no pressure, bud.
Yeah, I mean, if Eovaldi retires after this year, which he's not going to, he'd still have plenty of money. But yeah, it's extremely important for him. Gut feeling on Eovaldi, do you think he's back next year?
I don't
think so either. So I'm wishing him well, hope that he shows well and gets paid by somebody, not the Red Sox, next year.
Yep.
Okay, so as I mentioned at the top of the show, the Boston Red Sox announced the winners of the organization's 2022 Minor League Awards. Here are the awards. Offensive Player of the Year, first baseman Nico Cavadas. Defensive Player of the Year, infielder/outfielder Sidan Rafaela. Starting Pitcher of the Year, Brian Baio. Relief Pitcher of the Year, Frank Herman, which is going to take me a while to master saying again. But we did get told by one of our excellent listeners, Zach, that, you know, it has switched back. So at least I feel better about that. Base Runner of the Year, infielder David Hamilton, who had like 70 plus steals on the year. Latin Program Position Player of the Year, Andy Lugo. Latin Player Pitcher of the Year, Eberson Polanco, and Zach Kelly was recognized as the Lou Gorman Award winner, given annually to a Red Sox minor league pitcher, minor league player, I should say, who has demonstrated dedication and perseverance in overcoming obstacles while working his way to the major league team. We've talked about Zach Kelly's journey here and you know, how long it took him to get to the major leagues, and the fact that he's looking like he absolutely does belong is pretty cool. Do you have any thoughts on any of these in particular, or anybody on this list stand out to you as particularly noteworthy, or anybody you're surprised about?
No surprises. Definitely no surprises. I don't think there's really a single surprise on anybody on this list. I think there was a couple of different candidates for Offensive Player of the Year, but I like that it went to Cavadas, and I'm not really surprised that it did. Just given the power that he showed, and even though the power and average weren't quite there at AA, the walk rate and the on base ability was there. And so it's the offensive production, didn't see like really a massive drop, but, he did kind of cruise his way through multiple levels. So I think at some point that was going to catch up to him. And so it did right at the very end. But he just, across all the levels that he was able to achieve, the overall line's pretty darn impressive. So don't fault that there at all. So no, I wasn't really surprised by any of these.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I think they were all pretty chalk picks. You know, the, I guess if I were to single out two individuals who I will think about the most when I think about this year's minor league season across the board for the Red Sox, I think I'll remember it as the Sidan Rafaela breakout year. On the offensive side of things and on the pitching side of things, I think Brian Baio and his development and the step forward that he took, and You know, even the growth that we've seen from Bayo at the major league level across the last couple of months, and how much his stuff has evolved and how he's attacking hitters. You know, he's having his best success here in September. So it's been really good to see those two individuals and what a step forward they both took. So great development stories there.
Yeah, Bayo's absolutely crushing it in September too. And, you know, seeing the steps forward that he's made at the major league level, I think after the rough first starts and then him being sent down again, I wasn't sure when we might be able to see him again. But that was helped by some injuries for him to basically come back. I think it was like a week later. So he was kind of thrust right back into it. With not much time to really kind of like settle himself back at AAA. And he came right back up and then just kind of continued to learn on the fly and really straightened himself out, and has just shoved all month of September. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, he really has. And I enjoyed watching him go against Aaron Judge as well. It was kind of funny to see the Judge family overreacting to Judge making a little bit of mildly hard contact with a Bayo slider that just went nowhere. Died in like left center. But yeah, it's good to see. He seems like he's pitching with so much confidence, and I've loved everything that I've seen from Bayo up in the major leagues in terms of, you know, his ability to learn and interact with his teammates and stay positive. And I don't know, I think the Red Sox have a really good one here in Bayo. Maybe the best. You know, we talked about it when he came up, that he might be the best starting pitcher that they've developed since, you know, the days of Buchholz and Lester. And I think I might even be ready at this point to say the best since Lester, going even above what we saw from Buchholz. But I don't know. Future looks bright for that kid.
Sure does. It's going to be real exciting.
Also, I don't know if you saw this, but I tweeted it out, but Pedro Martinez dropped that this kid has Cy Young stuff on him. Did you catch that?
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, a little that nugget from Pedro during a little segment on TV. So, you know, when Pedro's saying those types of things about you, that's something. So,
yeah, it is.
You can dream on that for sure. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the Red Sox have 5 losses in a row. Heading into tonight, they are behind the Orioles, so potentially 6 losses in a row as you're listening to this, depending on how this game goes and whether or not it gets out of rain delay. But the AL batting race is still just really up for grabs. Xander Bogaerts and Judge heading into today were both at .314, but Judge had the slight edge in percentage points there. Luis Arraez at .313. Xander, technically right now as we're recording this, is down to .313. All these guys are pretty much tied at this point, so it's going to come down to what happens over the last 10 days. If you had to make a guess, who ends up getting the batting title?
Bogaerts.
Okay. I just feel like it's the year of the Judge, so as much as I want my guy Bogey to get it, I feel like Judge is going to end up with it. You get the triple crown.
Probably not wrong. I want him to get the home run record, but then have the triple crown spoiled by Bogaerts, because I want Bogaerts to have a batting title.
Yeah.
And plus, it would just be really fun to have that spoil the Yankees. So.
Yeah, I'm fully with that. That's what I want to happen. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. Feels like Judge is just something else this year. And the fact that he snuck up in this race is just remarkable. If Judge does win it, though, some fun facts for you about the Triple Crown. He will be the 3rd Yankee ever to win the Triple Crown. Can you guess the other 2 Yankees to do it?
Ruth and Mantle?
You got one of them, Mantle, but not Ruth.
Wow. Yeah. Gehrig.
Yep. Gehrig, okay. And Mantle.
Yeah, those 3 were the 3 I was going to guess. So yeah. I just figured Ruth probably had to be one of them. That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, so he will be the 3rd guy, and that will be the only franchise ever with 3 different guys to win the award. The Red Sox have 2 winners of the Triple Crown. Do you know who they are?
Fred Lynn and Ted Williams.
Ted Williams is one. Fred Lynn is not. You're thinking you're missing the obvious one from the
Yastrzemski.
Yes, there you go.
That was I meant Yastrzemski, not Lynn.
But that was bad. I think you're just tired at this point. Everybody when we think of Triple Crown, we think of Yaz in 67. So
right, yeah, that was bad.
That's okay.
Yeah, hey, I got there.
We forgive you. and it was unfair for me to like throw trivia at you at this hour of the night. All right. So let's go ahead and have a little bit of fun with Red Sox team leaders for this year without looking. So I'm going to quiz you on who the team leaders are. And you're going to do your darndest to try and get these categories. So
sure
who do you think is the Red Sox leader in WAR?
Xander
start
Bogarts.
Off with some easy ones. Yes. Xander Bogarts. How about home runs?
Devers.
Yes. Still with 27. I feel like Devers was there at the All-Star break. And he's still there. How about runs scored?
Also Devers?
No, he's very close at 80. But Xander has him edged out at 83 at this point. But I have a extra fun fact here for you. If you take what Tommy Pham has done over the course of the season with other teams, he would actually be the team leader with 87 runs scored this year, which I was kind of surprised about. Yeah. Considering the season that Xander has had, that's pretty good. RBI.
Devers.
Yep. Still Devers, 84. Not having a guy that's going to hit 100 RBIs this year or drive in 100 runs, I should say, is kind of weird because it seems like he's, unless he catches fire over the last 10 days, I don't think he's going to get there.
I mean, yeah, it'd be like 1 point, 1.5 a game the rest of the way. That's a lot.
It's not happening. Not that he's not capable of it. It's just very unlikely.
Especially while hurt.
Yeah. Stolen bases.
Oh, man. Story?
Yep.
That's got to be Story. Yeah.
Yep. Story with 13. Despite only playing in 94 games, he's been the most active on the base paths. And WRC plus, our favorite metric here.
Bogarts.
Tie, actually. Rafael Devers and Bogarts are both tied at 138. If you take guys that have been part-time players, though, with the Red Sox, this is quite fun. Reese McGuire, in his time with the Red Sox over 30 games, 161 WRC+. And Rob Refsnyder at 141. Those guys, very limited plate appearances, so you certainly can't count that as the team leader, but, fun nonetheless.
Yeah, that is fun.
On the pitching side of things, who's the overall WAR leader in your estimation?
Waka.
Yep. 2.1. Very low WAR leader for this year on the pitching side. Yeah, and that includes everybody, starters, relievers. Obviously, it would be a starter given that nobody's had a standout relief season other than Schreiber, who has almost a 2 WAR. Schreiber actually ranks 3rd on the team in Fangraph's WAR for pitchers, which is pretty remarkable considering 62 innings pitched.
Yeah.
Speaking of innings pitched, who do you think's the leader in the clubhouse there?
Also, no, Pivetta.
Pivetta, easily. Yeah. Wins it by 50.
I was going to say, because everybody else has been on the IL except Pivetta.
Yeah, and though one of the things that I wanted to follow up on though is that at the beginning of the season, one of the things that I had predicted when we were doing our previews is that Waka would not go past 125 innings, and that Rich Hill would not get over 85. And Rich Hill has shut me up with 112 in a third so far. And Waka is already at 120, so he's going to go over as well. So both of these guys did better than I thought.
That's closer to what I thought. I think I had somebody at 120. I think I went 120 and 100.
Yeah, you were definitely more optimistic than me. I remember that. So. Oh,
wait, what did you have Waka at?
I had Waka at 120, and I had Hill at 85.
I think I went 150 and 120 with Hill then. You went way under.
Yeah, I was very pessimistic about Rich Hill.
Yeah. I mean, with good reason.
Yeah, I'm happy I was wrong about those two. Ultimately, did it make a difference in the season? No, they're last place. But I was pleasantly surprised by both of those two guys.
Yeah.
Definitely delivered some good starts. ERA, in terms of, I'll give you a guess for lowest ERA by a reliever and lowest ERA by a starter. These are layups.
Yeah. Waka.
Mm-hmm.
And Schreiber.
Yep. Yep. That is it. I will tell you though that the second best starting pitcher with 5 2/3 innings pitched, Chris Sale, 3.18.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, what could have been?
Yeah.
All right. So that's all the fun that we have for numbers today, but I just wanted to it kind of puts in perspective why this is a last place team at this point. Going through those numbers, you're just kind of like, yeah, okay. Yeah, they had a ton of numbers, guys who underperformed their numbers, ton of guys who got hurt. It was just not their year overall.
It was not. Underwhelming.
Very much so.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So one of my favorite topics that I want to end the show with is, kind of where the Red Sox rank in the current Boston sports landscape. And we've been very spoiled over the last 20 plus years, really going back all the way to 2001 when the Patriots won against the Rams. I remember when that happened thinking that this was the greatest thing ever, and I would never see another Super Bowl, and I made my dad, let me skip school and go to the parade, and, I just remember how cold it was and all that stuff, and then lo and behold, every team went on to win a championship over the next 20 years, some multiple championships. So I wanted to kind of look at the landscape and kind of rank the Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, and Red Sox in some different categories here as to how we think, they rank in closeness to a championship, their ownership groups in front office, current talent, including prospects, how the teams will rank in the next 3 years, and how we think they will rank in popularity. So let's get right to it, Keaton. How would you rank the teams right now in terms of closeness to a championship, closeness to contending, and let's just say within the next season of each of these teams?
Well, this is really fun because if you take the most recent completed season of every single one of these teams, they were all in the playoffs. So if you you know, not including the season that is about to end for the Red Sox because it hasn't ended yet. They were in the playoffs last year, along with all the other Boston teams. Feels like so long ago how spoiled we are. It feels like the Red Sox would be in last. I mean, they kind of have to be. Even with this potential Mac Jones ankle sprain debacle toppling down on top of the Patriots.
I have them in last, so I agree with you.
Yeah. It feels like the easiest is the last and first, which is Celtics first, Red Sox last, and then how do you slot in the Patriots and Bruins? And it feels like a lot may weigh on whether or not the quarterback for the next 8 games is Brian Hoyer or not. Because I wouldn't feel great about that. I would put the Patriots third if that was the case, and the Bruins second.
Well, you're a smart man, Keaton, because that's exactly how I had it. Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, Red Sox. You know, Celtics and Red Sox, I think, as you said, are pretty self-explanatory. Celtics couple yeah. wins away from the NBA championship. Red Sox, I wanted to put them higher because I do think there is a path here for the Red Sox to have a good offseason in 2022-2023 and come back and really, you know, do some great things in 2023. So I think that turnaround for the Red Sox could be dramatic and quick if Bloom has a really good offseason, but we just have zero evidence so far of Bloom being able to complete an offseason like that. So I can't give credit when I've never seen Bloom do it at that point. And for me, you know, when we talk about closeness to a championship in the next season, next full season, Bruins get the edge over the Patriots for me because they were able to convince, you know, Bergeron to come back again, Krejci to come back, Marchand and McAvoy are going to be out for part of the season with injuries, but they will eventually come back as well. So it seems like the Bruins are gearing up for at least one more run, and I've been really bearish on the Patriots. I predicted before this season that they'd be 6-11, and I think that I might actually be right. About that, I just don't think they have a ton of talent. And like you said, with Mac going down with the high ankle sprain, which looks like it's going to require surgery, not feeling very good about the direction of that team.
No. Feels like the offense doesn't know what it's doing without McDaniels. It's a bummer.
Yeah, it is tough to watch Matt Patricia and Joe Judge try and figure things out over there. It's not been fun so far. All right, let's move on to the next category. How would you rank the ownership groups / front office of these 4 teams?
Yeah. This one is kind of fun, I think. I think I'd go... Patriots, Celtics, Bruins... Red Sox.
Wow, we've got some arguments right now.
Well, I know that you hate Bill Belichick, so I imagine yes. You didn't have the Patriots very high.
No.
Even though that's banana land.
I don't know. Okay, so first we have to talk about the Red Sox here. You had the Red Sox last in this?
Yes.
I had the Red Sox first.
Interesting.
Okay, so here's my reasoning, and I want to hear what your reasoning is for last place. But so I appreciate the fact that John Henry bought this team, what was it, 2002 when he purchased the team?
Yeah.
And they have won 4 World Series, and they've done it with a bunch of different cores, a bunch of different managers, you know, a bunch of different general managers. And they've always spent towards the top of the market. So when I look at like their performance, it's not necessarily tied to a certain coach, a certain manager, you know, a certain player. It's just, they just keep doing it. So that's why I put the Red Sox first. This doesn't, you know, reflect that I don't have a ton of faith in what Bloom's doing, but I do have faith in Henry's ability to figure out a new solution if Bloom doesn't work out.
So I guess, how did you do your ranking just on like their entire tenure?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay. That was not how I was doing mine.
Okay, so you were doing it like right now?
Yeah. Like faith right now in ability to turn around a title.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe I put a little bit more stock.
I would not have the Red Sox at the bottom ranking their entire body of work. Obviously, I mean, they have the second amount of titles in the last 20 years. I would still have the Patriots first, but I would have the Red Sox second after that. Okay. As frustrating as I have found them over that time. And, you know, I've been very critical of them, but still respecting the four World Series that they have won, I would have them second in overall body of work. Just right now, I'm extremely frustrated with them and don't feel like really, I mean, I guess like we got some potential answers on the direction of the club in Bloom's most recent interview, which I think was positive and good to hear. But until we actually get the action, it's just words. Because at this point, that's all we've heard for the past 3 years is words. We haven't actually seen the action yet. So I'm just extremely frustrated with the now. So that was why I had them last in my ranking of now.
Yeah. No, I mean, that does make some sense. I think their future is about as questionable because they're a last place team right now. And if they have a really bad offseason, they will be a last place team again next year with how good the AL East team is, or the AL East division is. So, yeah, I think that's definitely something you could argue. In terms of the way that I had the rest of the teams, after the Red Sox, I had the Celtics, then the Patriots, then the Bruins. And let me just defend my Patriots hate here, because I know that you have the Patriots first in this category. So my thinking here is that Kraft bought the team in 94, immediately did some really good things, turned them around. By 97, Parcells and the Patriots reach a Super Bowl. He makes a really good hire in Bill Belichick. Belichick drafts Brady. The next 20 years of a dynasty ensue. All that is gravy. But we've never seen a Patriots, you know, Super Bowl or even like super successful team really without Tom Brady here. So I just, until I see Belichick get this thing back on the tracks, or until I see Kraft like clear house of, you know, Belichick and all of his sycophants and build something else here, it's hard for me to give as much credit as like John Henry and being able to do it with so many different groups.
They went to a playoffs last year with a rookie quarterback.
They did. And they got absolutely dismantled.
I mean, the Bills are a very good team.
The Bills are very good. Yeah.
I mean, Tom Brady aside, the man has many more hits than he does misses. We focus on the misses a lot, and you know, wide receiver being a big one. But the dude just, he gets it right a lot, like a whole lot, and he just gets so many guys to buy in. And even in the season when Brady went down, went 11 games with Matt Castle, it's not really his fault they didn't go to the playoffs that year. They had the same record as two other teams that went to the playoffs. So
yeah,
he can do it with whoever's there. He's a talented guy.
Yep, he is.
Taking nothing away from Brady. Obviously, it's the combination of the two that made them so successful. I don't think one is... I know you think that Brady is significantly more responsible than the other. Yes. I think it was the perfect merger of the two, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that and taking more away from one or the other. And obviously on their own, I think they're still pretty darn good. Obviously, Brady won a Super Bowl after leaving, and I think the Patriots are still in a really good spot with just Belichick.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think the best argument that I've heard either way is that, like, for the first 10 years of Brady's career, it was probably more Belichick. And for the second 10 years here, it was probably more Brady. I think that's probably the logical way to look at it. I have fully admitted I have. I am, like, an obnoxious WEEI caller when it comes to how I view the Patriots. I'm just pure emotion when it comes to the Patriots. So they're the team I cannot look logically at. So I understand that, you know, I'm not actually playing with a full deck here when talking about the Patriots. But, you know, unequivocally, I think the Bruins have to be last on this in terms of ownership groups and front offices. I just have to take a moment here to skewer the Jacobs family and their absentee ownership, their cheapness, and the fact that they are basically letting Cam Neely and Don Sweeney, who are terrible at their jobs, continue to run this operation. It's an absolute clown show of ownership. It's crazy because Boston is such a remarkable hockey town too. We deserve way better ownership than what the Bruins have, and they're sort of successful in spite of all this crap. So I just wish they had something better.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably my emotions that had you saying that you're emotional about the Patriots, and I'm very obviously emotional about the Red Sox and their front office and not being able to think logically about them. Probably should have been third and the Bruins fourth, but just my spite being like, God damn it, jerks, you're last.
Hey, I get it. I get it. When it comes to your teams, who you put so much love into and so much time into, it's tough to be purely emotion-free all the time.
Indeed.
Next question I had for us was, how would you rank their current talent plus the prospects? And I'll give my rankings first this time. I had Celtics 1, Red Sox 2, Bruins 3, Patriots 4. And, just to go down this list a little bit, Celtics is obvious, so I won't spend too much time on that. With the Red Sox, I still think, like, we're in a good spot with the farm system. A lot of talent coming up. Tristan Casas making his debut. Devers still being on the team. I think they'll get something figured out with those guys. Going down the line a little bit further, you know, Bruins, they have the worst farm system in all of hockey. They're ranked 32nd out of 32nd by most outlets. And a bunch of really old guys at the top. So once those guys are gone, it's pretty much going to be the basement for the Bruins for a while. But the Patriots I had below them because, you know, as I kind of stated at the top of the show, I don't believe the Patriots have enough talent as it stands right now. And I have completely lost faith in Belichick's ability to serve as a general manager of this team and make the right draft picks. So, you know, that's why I have them in that order. How did you rank these guys?
So I had Celtics and Red Sox 1 and 2 as well, but then I had it flipped. I had the Patriots and the Bruins because, you mentioned the Bruins prospects. The biggest thing with the Bruins was just having secondary scoring outside of the main guys in the perfection line. And Taylor Hall is a huge boost to that, and that helps. But I don't think it's enough. They convinced DeBrusk to stay, but I don't think they've really maximized his talent, and part of that goes to, like, basically this question and, like, developing prospects and the current talent. So just not having enough secondary scoring, I think Taylor Hall is a really nice piece. Obviously, he had a really nice end of the season, and he is a nice piece to this roster to be here for a longer term, but I just don't think it's enough. So I think right now I would give the edge to the Patriots over the Bruins.
Very fair, very fair. And I think that some Bruins fans will be screaming at us that Fabian Lysell is like going to be the next great thing. Lysell is currently ranked 170th by Scott Pronman in terms of top prospects in hockey. So he's a nice prospect, but I don't think he's quite what Bruins fans think he is at this point. A lot of work to be done on that system. How will the teams rank in the next 3 years? So I didn't want to project ahead too far here because I think especially with how quickly things change in the NBA and how much a single draft can change things in the NFL, I didn't really want to like project too far ahead. I think you can project further ahead in baseball and hockey than you can in the other sports just because we know more about their pipelines. But how do you see the next 3 years of these teams? In 3 years, what are the rankings going to be?
So is this like 2025, who's closest to a title?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, it's pretty hard to bet against the Celtics right now. I guess the 3 years puts a little bit of a cap on it, right? Because Jaylen Brown's up 2024.
Right.
So that puts a bit of a cloud over the 3 years, but yeah, I mean, even that included, it's pretty darn hard to bet against the Celtics. And then I would say it should be the Red Sox, and then Patriots, and then Bruins, I would imagine. The window's closed on all of these aging guys, and they've begun the rebuild.
I agree with you, aside from the bottom two. I had it Celtics, Red Sox, Bruins, Patriots.
Apparently I hate the Bruins and you hate the Patriots.
I'm just killing the Patriots here. I just don't believe in the plan. Like I just don't think that Bill has it anymore. And I think that the Bruins are always going to do enough to get in the playoffs because the Jacobses really care about the playoff gate. But I do think the bottom is coming for the Patriots sooner rather than later. I'm not one of these people that thinks this is firmly a franchise on the upswing right now. And I wouldn't be surprised if Belichick gets his wins record over Shula, calls it a day, Kraft cleans house. And in 3 years, we're talking about the Patriots as really kind of starting over from almost square one.
Well, then Josh McDaniels will be back as head coach.
Well, he might be fired after his 0-3 start with the Raiders here. Things are not going well for him as a head coach. This guy is snake bitten, huh?
By week 12, he'll be back as offensive coordinator. And then head coach in waiting again for the fourth time?
I wouldn't mind seeing Gerard Mayo as the head coach of the Patriots to come after Belichick. It'd be cool.
That would be cool. I think that'd be a bad thing. I like it.
He's the only guy on the staff I like, so yeah. The only guy who's not related to Bill.
Yeah.
Or an adopted child of Bill, like Patricia and Judge. All right. How do you think they will rank in terms of popularity? I guess in the near term, so next 3 years in terms of, so right now the current rankings are Patriots, Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins, in terms of the most recent polls that were done by network analysts, and it wasn't particularly close. The Patriots were far ahead, and then it was very close between the Red Sox and Celtics. They were separated by one percentage point, and the Bruins were pretty far off the back end of that. Do you think that'll change at all in the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, so I actually, the middle were kind of the ones that I was, football just rules the country. So yep. I figured Patriots would probably stay number one, pretty much regardless of what happens. Even if your scenario plays out, it probably still would be crazy popular.
Yep, I agree with you. Just because
football. But I mean, if the next 3 years the Celtics are in the finals like every year, or pretty darn close to the finals every year, I'd have to imagine that that 1% gap gets closed, and we're looking at the Celtics over the Red Sox with the Bruins last.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Keaton. I chose to exercise some Sox optimism here, that the Red Sox will get things back on track and that they'll maintain a slight edge over the Celtics. Because I think like if the Red Sox are really good and the Celtics are really good, the Red Sox are still going to be more popular because they traditionally just have been more popular when both of those teams have been really good. But I agree with you that that gap is just really closing fast. And I think if the Red Sox slip at all, they're going to be surpassed by the Celtics.
Yeah, I think the margin, I guess air quotes, margin for error is obviously much finer for the Celtics. Like Red Sox have one good run to the postseason, and then obviously you know, Boston is completely Red Sox crazy again, and that gap gets huge.
Yeah,
it doesn't take much for the Red Sox to swing that percentage. But I think if the Celtics are consistently like crazy freaking good for all 3 years, then I think that they could overcome that 1% if the Red Sox are still trying to figure out their way. Basically, if they don't have the offseason that we hope they have.
Yeah.
And so there's like they're sputtering for the first two of these 3 years while the Celtics are competing for a title, then I think that that's obviously a small enough gap for the Celtics to pass the Red Sox.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right there. And I do wonder how the changes to baseball in 2023 are going to impact all this.
Good point.
You know, the NBA has been growing very rapidly, and baseball viewership has not been growing quite as rapidly. So, but I do wonder if those are going to have any impacts. So
I got one way. I got one way the Red Sox can secure that popularity percentage. Our first listener question there.
Okay, go for it.
Mike Toomey says, would you trade Casas or Meyer as a centerpiece in a deal for Ohtani? I would. I certainly would. And I'd be very happy to have Ohtani on the team. And having the most exciting player in baseball would definitely make the Red Sox super popular.
Yeah, I'll go one further here, Mike. I'll trade them both
for Ohtani. There you go. I would as well.
Yeah, I think that would be about the best thing that could happen to this city as a baseball fan would be to get Ohtani. So that would absolutely rule. And I don't think that's too much of an ask. I mean, if you look at it, Ohtani's been worth, geez, like, what, 16 WAR over the last 2 years combined? So certainly worth two prospects, no matter how good.
Yeah.
House of Kuzu has our final question of the night. And, you know, I appreciate a couple questions here rolling in, especially as we wrap up last 10 games of a disappointing season. And he says, I get that Dollar Tree Reese, as he calls him, has played good, but he's not been the type of player in his career that he's been this year, so I don't trust him. How about 4 years and $60 million for Wilson Contreras, or pay for the Sean Murphy premium with prospects? So talking about not running back that platoon of Reese and Wong that we've been talking about over the last couple of episodes, let me ask you, Keaton, which of those would you prefer? 4 and 60 for Contreras or trading for Murphy?
Yeah, I think that's a really good evaluation of Contreras too. 4 years, $60 million, $15 million a year, I think makes a lot of sense for his services. He's 30 or 31. So I think that probably makes a lot of sense for his market value and his talent. Sean Murphy's 27 and has 3 years of control. But I think I'd rather go that route, the Sean Murphy route. and focus on spending the money elsewhere on the roster. If it's me, and I don't, I mean, it would take pretty solid prospects, but I don't think it would take a ton. It's not like it'd be a massive hit, and then you would have that position shored up for at least 3 years. Obviously, you could do some stuff there to keep him here longer, but I think also Murphy, I think, is just a better option. A catcher there, Wilson, obviously, has had a pretty good season this year, which obviously contract year is a really good time to have it. But I think I would prefer the Murphy option here, just for the cost of spending the money elsewhere on the roster and just go through arbitration with him or the whatever you want to settle up on, whatever his contracts would end up being, which would probably be less. And I think you get more out of him in those 3 years, and then you can kind of just see where you go at catcher from there. And then I think this the better option on the field, contracts and, you know, cost to acquire aside, I think would be Murphy.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It would be Murphy by a country mile for me. It's not, I don't really want any part of Wilson Contreras at 4 years and 60. I'd rather run the platoon back instead of paying him that, just because I don't think it's particularly important to pay for a good offensive catcher. I think it's way more important that your catcher is really great defensively and really great at calling a game. And Sean Murphy is elite at both of those. And also offensively, he's pretty damn good. So, yeah, I love the idea of Sean Murphy, and I think the Red Sox should be all over that. And then, you know, extend him. I don't think Robot Ump is coming anytime soon. I think these changes that are happening in baseball in 2023 are pretty big changes, and I think they'll leave the game alone for a while. So, you know, I think it'll certainly be no Robot Umps through the remaining 3 years of control for Sean Murphy, and probably for significant time after that.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. Well, that is our show tonight. We hope you enjoyed it. A little bit off the beaten path in terms of not just talking Red Sox for us. So, you know, tell us whether you like that or not. We'd appreciate some feedback. And, you know, definitely not going to happen very often. But, you know, with 10 games left and a fifth place team, you're going to get what you're going to get, people. So, Keaton, thank you for joining me tonight. Appreciate it as usual. Follow Keaton on Twitter at TheSpokenKeats. Follow me at DevJake, and follow Keaton tweeting about the Red Sox at OverTheMonster.com or at OverTheMonster. All right, that's it. Thanks, guys.